Welcome to the GVA Legal Podcast. I'm your host, Jean Kambuni. On today's episode, we want to talk about two serious issues. The first is licensing trends in the hospitality industry, and the second is the classification and grading of tourism accommodation and catering establishments. It is a mouthful, I agree. And that's why I have three guests in studio. I have Frederick Giacomondi, the Director, Standards and Quality Assurance at the Tourism Regulatory Authority. Welcome, Director Omondi.
Thank you very much. And we thank you very much for inviting us to the studio.
Thank you. I also have Yusuf Mohammed. He is the Nairobi Regional Manager, and he's here on behalf of the Director Compliance and Trade Facilitation. Karibu Yusuf.
Asante Jean, thank you so much for the opportunity.
And finally, I have Caroline Sain, the Legal Officer at the Tourism Regulatory Authority. Welcome, Sain.
Thank you, Jean. We're grateful for the opportunity.
So we'll begin with the first part of our conversation today, and I think we'll start with talking about licensing trends within the hospitality industry. I'm very curious about this, and I really want to know about hotels, restaurants, tea houses, coffee houses, and how they're classified by you and what licenses they require. So before we do that, just give us an understanding. Who is the Tourism Regulatory Authority? What do you do?
Thank you once again. Let me introduce the authority. A Tourism Regulatory Authority is a state corporation currently under the Ministry of Tourism, Wildlife and Heritage. It's a state corporation created by laws of Kenya, the Tourism Act number 28 of 2011. Its mandate is to regulate the tourism sector, but more importantly, it has several functions outlined under Section 7(1) of the Tourism Act 2011, which states, among others, one of the functions is to formulate guidelines and prescribe standards for regulating the tourism sector. Another one is to register, license, and grade tourism facilities throughout the country. Others include also to develop and implement standards, criteria for classification of tourism facilities, again, throughout the country. Those are key functions of the authority.
So basically, license, you grade, you register.
Yes.
And that this includes...
Register, license, yes, and grade. Grading and classification is used interchangeably. They mean one and the same thing.
Let's just now classify the industry in which you work. What do we call the tourism and hospitality sector? What does it comprise of?
Broadly speaking, tourism industry comprises the tourism subsector and hospitality subsector. Other destinations would prefer to call it tourism and hospitality. Others would call it just tourism industry. But those are two aspects which mean different things. Hospitality refers to facilities that offer accommodation and catering services, while the tourism subsector includes tour operation services, travel agencies, and other tourism products that includes the tourism sites.
Yusuf, now that you're our manager for the Nairobi office, how do you understand the tourism and hospitality industry? We've broken it down into two subsectors, the tourism and the hospitality subsectors. Yeah. And I feel like it's more encompassing. Before, as I walked in, perhaps you'd be thinking that only you look at establishments, so restaurants, hotels. Yeah. But when you include in the tourism sector, then you get in travel agents, you get in tour operators, and that whole gambit of suppliers, right from when a person walks in as a tourist in the country to where they go to eat. And that could be even just local Kenyans where they
eat. Correct.
True.
Yeah. What is the objective for which the Tourism Act was enacted? I know you're not a lawyer, but that's why we're here, to talk to non-lawyers about legal issues.
Basically, our main objective is to regulate the industry. Because prior to when TRA was formulated, you will agree with me that the tourism industry had no regulator. So our role basically is to regulate the industry.
And when was the Tourism Regulatory Authority established? That's so that we have context.
The Act came into effect in 2011. And TRA as an institution was operationalized from the 2014. But we got our operational independence in 2017.
Let me jump to the lawyer.
Yes.
Because lawyers like things about act.
Yeah.
And what was the context for which the act was put in place? We've said that prior to the enactment of the Tourism Act, there was no formal way in which the sector was regulated. Why was there a need to put in the act, and why was there a need to establish this authority?
Okay, thank you, Jean. You know, you have said that it's a legal issue. I think it's more of a technical issue because the sector needs some standards. Kenya is operating as a destination that is competing with other countries. We need to get tourists into the country. We need to package our tourism products. So I believe there was a need to harmonize this sector, find a way to regulate them, put them into law, see which category of the tourism sector fits in which section of regulation, and then also protect the interest of the tourists at the end of the day. Later on in our discussion, we'll come to learn about how easy it is to defraud a tourist in this sector. So that is where we come in as a regulator.
And who are the stakeholders in the tourism industry? Bwana Yusuf.
Well, if you refer to our act, the 9th schedule of the Act, we have listed who are the main stakeholders. And this listing is in classes. We have Class A, Class B, Class C. It's in classes, the main stakeholders. But if I just take you through some of them, we have the hoteliers, the restaurants we have referred to, the tour operators, the travel agencies, all through to the curio vendors, the professional safari photographers, including the hospitality training institutions. All these are still stakeholders.
And you go all the way to travel companies? Because I'm trying to think of it, if I'm a tourist coming in, the first thing I'd interact with is a travel company. So whether it'll be the flight company or an agent that will book the flight for me and then organize an establishment where I will sleep, then how I will get there, the travel company that I will use to get there, I get finally to the hotel, which has been classified and graded. Then I circle back and use the tour agent to get back to the airport and leave the country.
Yes. In fact, all those you've listed, they are there in the 9th schedule. All these are main stakeholders. We refer them to as our main stakeholders, and they are all regulated by TRA. But other stakeholders also, the suppliers of both consumers and non-consumers items. We also have the transport providers. They are all consumers. They are the security providers, both private and public, because without security, you cannot differentiate between tourism and security. It must go hand in hand. So the security arms are all our stakeholders. The attraction sites. This includes things like the museums, the parks, the game reserves. All these are stakeholders. The insurance companies, there's government and all its agencies, related agencies. All these are stakeholders. So this industry has so many other stakeholders.
I feel like when you look at the tourism agency, there's a way in which it interacts with almost every single industry that we have within the country. That then leads me to the question, what contribution does this sector make towards our economy that necessitates this investment in it and this need to regulate it?
You're very right, because the importance of tourism and hospitality industry is immense due to its multiplier effect. That is by the virtue of relating with all the other industries. For instance, one of the things which you cannot fail to mention when we talk of contribution of tourism, its contribution to the GDP of the country. And this one has also been mentioned in the Kenya Vision 2030, whereby this industry has been listed as one of the major economic pillars which will help Kenya attain its vision by 2030. In terms of employment, if you refer to the World Travel and Tourism Council report of 2020, it has established that this industry has contributed close to 1.58 million jobs, and these are direct employment. The economic survey by the Kenya National Bureau of Statistics has also stated that this industry has contributed almost 9% of total employment in the country. If you look at the foreign exchange also, this industry, it has always been referred to as the largest contributor of the foreign exchange, Anna. So if you refer to this, you'll agree with me that the contribution of the hospitality industry is immense in the country.
In fact, you talked about 1.5 million direct jobs, and you're not even counting the households from which those individuals come from and the impact that then has on their households, their communities, and it changes an area. So I can understand how important the industry is.
Exactly.
Let me just jump into, you talked about your different stakeholders, and one of them are the establishments that you license. Now, I want us to get into those licenses. And what are the categories of establishments that are in the tourism and hospitality industry?
Well, the category have been well defined in the, I'll still refer to the Act, the Tourism Act, the ninth schedule basically, whereby if I just take you through the categories, we have Class A enterprises. These are majorly the accommodation facilities.
And by accommodation, you mean a major hotel or a small little, what can I call it?
Motel.
Bed and breakfast.
In fact, anyone offering accommodation, yeah? Yes. From those large hotels, which we know, the guest houses. As long as you offer accommodation and you contribute by there, if you do offer that, you will contribute immensely. Because if you talk of bed capacity, we do consider all that.
So in a grade A, the category A, what bed capacity, what format would that take? How many beds would they have? Is there a certain minimum threshold that they may have for them to be classified as a grade A facility or establishment?
In fact, as long as you have a bed, from one bed to
500.
The maximum number.
1,000.
Yes, even. Yes, yes. We do respect you and we consider you as one of our accommodation pass facilities because you contribute to the bed capacity of our destination. Yeah, that is grade A. On grade B, we have now what we refer to as restaurants and other food beverage services. These are what typically we known as sit-in restaurants. And if you talk of other food and beverage facilities, these are people who are even offering the outside catering, all other form of, as long as you're dealing with food and beverage and you don't have the sit-in restaurant, you belong to that other category of other food and beverage services.
So grade B would be a restaurant.
Yes.
As long as I have sit-in capacity.
Yes.
So grade A, I'm a hotel. I have to have a bed for me to categorize or fall within the category of grade A.
Exactly.
And this could be one bed to 1,000 or 10,000 beds.
True.
All of us fall within the classification of a hotel.
Hotel.
Number two is a restaurant.
Yes.
But a restaurant with sit-in capacity. So
not exactly sit-in. Either sit-in or without sit-in.
So sit-in or takeaway or even catering services.
Yes, yes. As long as you deal with food and beverage.
And beverages.
Yes, yes.
Then now grade C is?
Grade C now, this whereby we have other enterprises like the tour operators, the travel agencies, all those, they fall under grade C.
Now, I'd like to take us back to grade B for a moment.
Yes.
And I'd like to take us back in time to the pandemic. At that time, I think we were having the Ministry of Health have to think through regulations and how to ensure that we were safe and that we did not pass along COVID-19.
Yeah.
And one of the criteria that they used was to limit interaction by closing down establishments of gathering. So whether it's hotels or whether it's restaurants. Mm. Now, in this classification of restaurant, does a roadside motel classify? What classifies as a restaurant? Does a roadside kiosk meet that?
Yes, they do. Because we'll go by the definition of what is a restaurant. If you refer to the Section 2 of the Tourism Act, it simply defines a restaurant as any premise of which the business of supplying food or drink for reward. And if we say for reward, this is
payment.
Monetary reward, yeah.
It's a reward, it's just a payment.
Yeah. So by that definition, yes, they do.
So it doesn't matter what you are. If you're a roadside kiosk, is there some sort of disaggregation? And I keep going back to this because I feel like while the Act has given catch-all phrases and tried to categorize things into hotels, restaurants, operators, now within that individual category, whether you're grade A, grade B, classification A, classification B, classification C. Do we have some sort of disaggregation to show your breach, your level, your scale? So like, for instance, we can differentiate a large scale restaurant that has like maybe let's say Art Cafe or Java that in essence, every time they set up with the capacity to feed 50, 60, 100 people at one sitting versus a coffee house that just puts in a table and serves only tea and doesn't have any services for cooking anything in particular. Is there some sort of classification or has there been determined that there's a need to do some sort of differentiation or disaggregation of the market and look at different categories?
Legally, we've tried to segregate them based on, for example, restaurants, based on the revenue that they bring in. So that also determines the license fee. So you can't compare the license fee for a restaurant that brings in over 6 million annually versus that that brings in about 2 million. So that's how we've tried to segregate them. On the accommodation services and how we've segregated them is Dr. Mondi will come and explain the classification. Now, the classification tells you, based on standards, that this is a 1-star, 2-star, 3-star. That you'll only find out once we have classified and we've given you your rating. So in terms of day-to-day interaction, we segregate them based on the license fee that they're supposed to pay.
And the license fee is determined by the revenue that they generate. For restaurants. So the higher the revenue you generate, the higher the fee you pay for your license.
Yes.
Okay. And for hotels, we will determine it when we come to the classifications. Yes.
Also, just to add on what Saina said, for hotels, that will be differentiated with the capacity.
The bed capacity.
The bed capacity. And also what you charge. And this is...
So if you're a premium hotel and the premiumness is seen in the amount of money that you require from your guests, you'll also be categorized at a higher level than perhaps a hotel that, if maybe like we're to take a comparison and say White Sands versus Pride Inn. I don't know if they're in different categories, but they may be now in the same category. But if you're to take a lower category versus a large scale a hotel that maybe has 5 stars, we'll get to that.
Yes.
And that will have a different categorization.
Yes. Exactly.
And now that you've spoken about bed space and having a bed, there is a new phenomenon for any person to be a business owner. I can be a business owner right from the comfort of my home. I can rent out just the bedroom next door that no one sleeps in. I'm supposed to have guests. They never come. So I can put it up on Airbnb or any other online site and I can be able to allow people to sleep there. How are Airbnbs or other forms of online monetization of internal bed space in private homes categorized?
Airbnb is not a tourism establishment. Airbnb is Airbnb is an advertising platform. Now, everyone who is advertising themselves on Airbnb, that's now we come back to see where we categorize you. Are you a class A enterprise? Most of them are. We have serviced apartments, I think, and we have private serviced apartments. Yusuf will be able to highlight how they're done. But it's important for everyone to understand that Airbnb is not a tourism. It's an advertising platform. We don't regulate Airbnb. We collaborate.
But now, if I put in my establishment, because again, as you've rightly said, Airbnb opens itself up to all sorts. So a hotel can place themselves on Airbnb as they would on bookings.com or any other online platform.
Exactly.
But an individual can also do that. So like, let me use myself. I like using myself as an example because then it's relatable. So I have an extra room, as I would. I have a 3-bedroom house. My children sleep in one. I sleep in the other. This room stays empty. And I realize that I can earn additional revenue from that room. Then I position that room on that advertising platform called Airbnb and say that every day you can pay a fee of $45 or $30, depending on where my house is located and my analysis of what people in my area charge. And I put that out there. And then someone comes and sees, actually, I do want to stay there. And they choose to stay there for 4 days, 5 days, in a month, doesn't matter. But I accumulate some sort of revenue from my private home and putting out this single room out on the market. Yeah. What happens? Must I get some sort of license?
Yes. The moment you've opened up your home for a guest.
That is not a relative or a friend.
You're using it for commercial purposes. Then that falls under the ambit of the Tourism Act. You will be found and you will need a license by the Tourism Regulatory Authority.
What license is this that I would need and how would I go about getting it?
Yusuf will explain it for you.
Yusuf.
We have got, lucky enough, over a period of time, we've been sensitizing people on that. Basically, if you, as Sain rightly put it, the minute you open up your home, you've already commercialized the property. So we'll take you through the Schedule 9 of the Act, and at most, you'll fall...
Grade A,
basically,
instantly.
Yes, grade A, but under a different category. Mm-hmm. Either one of the categories, mostly set in the urban setup, most of them do fall under the service departments. We have a set of requirements.
So what are the requirements that I'd need? Because I feel like setting up an Airbnb is something that everyone feels like, you know what, I can do this.
Maybe what I can say is that in our website, you'll find those requirements. But mostly, whenever we are doing our requirements, we are usually guided by parameters which will make sure that the guest is safe. So our requirements are usually geared towards statutory requirements. We'll check on statutory requirements. We'll check on safety issues. We'll check on environmental issues and health issues. So basically, our requirement will be zero in on those things. We must make sure that the guest who is coming into your facility is safe. Basically, those are the requirements will be geared towards that.
So in my understanding, and I will ask this back to you,
yes.
If I determine that I would like to open up my home and rent out one of the rooms within my home as to a guest and get money out of it, I've commercialized my property first. Mm. And if I've done this, then I would require a license.
Yes, from TRA.
From TRA.
Yeah.
And to be able to access this license, I go and see your requirements. They're available on your website. I can just go on your website and take a look at those requirements. And then now I make an application to you.
Yes.
Because for you to check that I meet the safety requirements, that I meet the comfort requirements that a guest would require, it would need for you to come and inspect my premises.
Exactly.
How long does it take for you to schedule an inspection of a premise if I were to make an application?
If you submit a complicated application, it will take us less than 2 to 3 days just to come, inspect your facility. The minute you've passed our quality audit, and then we'll process your license and issue you the license, which is renewable each and every year.
So it's an annual license, renewable annually.
Yes.
And do you then come and review my accommodation facility in order to renew the license?
If need be, we'll just come over for quality audit checks.
And how long does it take now between the application and 3 days, about 3 working days for you to be able to come and assess my property? How long does it take for me to acquire the license?
Okay, according to our service charter, any new application, it will take us 14 days for you to have your license.
So if I want to do Airbnb, I give myself about 1 month and I should be able to do it and have all the requisite licenses.
Precisely. And then if it's a renewal case, 7 days, maximum of 7 days, you should be having your license.
That's excellent. Yeah. Now let's go back to the other types of establishments. If I wanted to open up a hotel or a restaurant, what are the licensing requirements that I would need to meet?
Well, basically, from TRA, we are guided by the Tourism Act, and you'll definitely need the license from TRA. But other licenses which might be applicable from guided by the Immigration Act, especially if you're engaging
foreigners
in your business, then you must expect to comply with the Employment Act because you'll be employing people in your facility. There's also aspect of Occupation Safety and Health Act. That one you should be expected to comply with that. If you've gone a notch higher and selling alcohol, then the Alcohol Drinks Act comes in. Public health will always come in because your place must be habitable. And environment is also key because you're discharging to the environment. And there's also county government, which has its several laws, and it varies from county to county. And let's say any other act and subsidiary legislation, which will be established from time to time.
And what are the benefits of having a license? Why would I need to have a license? You know, I could try and operate under the fringes of the law, but what are the benefits of coming to you as the Tourism Regulatory Authority and getting a license?
Well, there are several. We have something called duty exemption, which the manager, Yusuf, will explain, where you can, as you're setting up your facility, we recommend duty exemption for you for things that you'll need to import from outside the country. That's one of the benefits. Then, of course, legally, you're supposed to have a license to operate. Now, if you work with the government, you can't get government tenders or jobs without having the license. So a hotel that is...
Or a catering establishment that wants to give food to a government establishment.
Or a travel agency that is booking tickets for the government, they have to have a tourism license. So you can't get that job without the license. Then I think I can hand over the rest to the manager.
Let's talk about this tax exemption. Yes, Yusuf.
Well, if you refer to our website again, one of the benefits which we usually give to licensed facilities is that custom duty exemption on imports. And on this, you can be exempted from whenever you import.
Yeah, what do you get exempted from?
Import duty waiver.
So we get an import duty waiver, yes, if at all we have the license, and yes, we can be able to use that license. We go to KRA, we say we have a license from TRA. We'd like to import the following things, and then KRA will be able to exempt us from specific duties.
Exactly, yes, which are outlined under the Act.
We have washing machines, we have kitchenware, we have fridges. We have so many things, and tour operators also have the 4x4, I think, truck.
Vehicles,
they get exempted on some duty for that. Then, of course, another benefit is the investor confidence that you were talking about, where Kenya is a destination. So you want to, once you're ensuring that the sector is properly regulated, then an investor can come and invest into the sector, like set up a facility or even buy into shares of a facility that is existing. Then we help facilitate work permits for foreigners who come to work in the sector. But also, as we do that, we also balance the need for what if we have the expertise in Kenya. So we do the balancing act so that we don't get certain issues arising from where you as a regulator, you're facilitating foreigners to work in your country. What about your own resources? So we do the balancing act. And then lastly, there was a time we had set up a financing during the COVID period. The government had set up financing for tourism establishments managed by the Tourism Finance Corporation. So you could get some loan to help you with your businesses. You could only get that with a tourism license. If you don't have a tourism license, you're not considered for that facility.
Now I have one more question to add. Oh, yes.
And then there's also endorsement and recognition by sector associations.
Okay, then I have one more question to ask. Can a license be suspended or cancelled? Can I lose this license? I've applied for it. I've been operating with it. Are there things that a particular operator, whether they are a hotel, a tourism, a travel agent, a tour operator, or a restaurant that they may do that would lead to the loss of their license?
Yes, a license can be cancelled. And this is mostly when you're in contravention of the Tourism Regulatory Authority regulations or the Tourism Act regulations. Because according to Section 100 of the Act, it simply states that when a licensee is being investigated in relation to an offence, and then we are certain that that person really
committed that offence,
yeah, a license can be suspended.
And in fact, you've mentioned something. So a license can be suspended if I do something that would be contravening to it or some sort of crime. I have a subsequent question on that. You've said you can investigate someone after you've investigated them and you determine that they have contravened the provisions of the Act or they have violated the requirements of their license. Their license is removed from them. Does the Tourism Regulatory Authority have the capability or ability to institute cases in court? Can you take an establishment after you've perhaps shut them down and investigated, determined that a crime or a violation happened? Can you take them to court and institute proceedings within the court system? And what type of proceedings would they be? Would they be criminal or just civil?
Well, yeah, thank you. The Act gives us the powers to prosecute an entity that is offending the Act, meaning committing a criminal offence. And operating without a licence is a criminal offence. And it warrants about a minimum of 100,000 fine or 18 months imprisonment or both. We work hand in hand with the DPP because we can't prosecute the cases ourselves. We have to do it through the DPP's office. And we also work with the Tourist Police Unit to do the arrest. So we have several cases going on currently, but I think with time they see the light and they pay the license and we withdraw the matter. We have no issue once you've paid your license.
So if I operate without a license, I can be taken to court. If I violate the requirements of my license, I can be taken to court.
Yes.
However, should I, if for instance I'm operating without a license and I put in a license, I pay for that license and now I am valid as per the law, then the case can be withdrawn. There's no need to see to its full and logical conclusion.
No, once you have paid your license fees and you have a license, we have no issue with you. We allow you to go on with business.
Thank you. I'd really like that, especially for all those Airbnb operators who are listening to this podcast and are operating without licenses. Kindly take a visit and
please get a license.
Get a license before you are found. It would be so horrible for you to be frog marshaled from your own home.
Yeah, you also asked us about the legal requirements of getting a license. Yes,
what are the legal requirements required before either setting up a hotel or an establishment and getting a license?
Okay, so there are several, but first we want to clarify that this is not a license for the sake of being a license. There are certain things that you must meet. So we have minimum standards that you must adhere to, and that's what they do when Yusuf says they do inspections before they issue you with the license. They have to check certain things. Then we ask for your business registration certificate if you're an entity. We ask for the county business permit for a liquor license if you're in the business of selling
alcohol.
Then we have food hygiene license for the
catering establishments or restaurants.
Very important, because you don't want a situation where people are
food poisoning happens and then you did not have the license or meet the standards for offering the service of food preparation.
Yes. So then we have EIA clearance certificate for hotels. We have registration of workplace licenses. So we have a few. You can get them in our website. But it's important for us to state that despite you having all these licenses, you have to meet some minimum standards. You just don't operate for the sake of operating. And also, it's important for us to regulate that sector to allow us to compete with other destinations as Kenya. Don't look at you as an individual, look at Kenya as a whole. And also, it's important for us to delineate. We want to clarify that a tourist is not majorly someone from outside the country.
It's true. Kenyans, you can have local tourists.
Yes, Kenyans are tourists. It's important for us to understand that, because one of our biggest issues is that we go to a restaurant and they complain that they don't serve tourists because they've not seen someone of a different race coming to the...
To sit in the establishment.
Yes. So also Kenyans, your own people, charity begins at home. First, take care of your people and then focus on the rest.
And I have to say that during the COVID-19 pandemic, if it wasn't for local tourism, a lot of our industries would have collapsed. And exactly. In fact, Kenyans really took on that mantle and they really traveled and saw their country. Walitembea Kenya.
Yeah. So even Kenyans should be considered tourists, and they are tourists for the purposes of the act.
Thank you. That, I think, brings us to the end of this episode. I'd like to thank my guests, Frederick Jakomundi, Director, Standards and Quality Assurance. I'd like to thank Yusuf Mohammed, the Nairobi Regional Manager for the Tourism Regulatory Authority, who was sitting in for the Director, Compliance and Trade Facilitation. And finally, I'd like to thank Caroline Thane, Legal Officer, the Tourism Regulatory Authority.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
Thank you so much for educating us on the work of the Tourism Regulatory Authority. I am your host, Jean Kambuni. Just let us know what you think about our episode. If you've noticed, we're changing the format of our podcast. Going forward, the GVA Legal Podcast will have 3 segments. The first segment will look at what has happened this month in the law. The second segment will be our usual interview with an in-studio guest. And the third segment will be the Book of the Week. In this segment, we will give a summary review of a recommended Book of the Week. Tell us what you think about our new format and this episode in the comment section of our social media pages or on email. Our email address is info@gvalawfirm.com. You can also follow Gikera and Vadgama Advocates on social media. You can find us on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook as GVA Law Firm. Thank you for joining us on the GVA Legal Podcast. Let's get real.